Coon Review, Print Speaking to the Blind, celebrating 40 years of audio newspaper production. Welcome to this week's edition of the Herald Scotland podcast, recorded at the Bishop Briggs Media Centre by our amazing volunteers. You can get in touch with us via Facebook, Twitter or Instagram using @CoonReview, that is @CoonReview. You can also contact us directly by emailing information@coonreview.com. That is information@coonreview.com. Or by calling 0141 772 3976. That's 0141 772 3976.
From the Herald Scotland, Wednesday the 6th of December, from the business section, popular Perthshire food hall bought by garden centre firm, article by Deputy Business Editor Scott Wright, an upmarket farm store in the popular Perthshire tourist town of Creath has changed hands, the Creath Food Company, an award-winning food hall, cafe and gift shop, has been sold by founder and local farmer Jamie Landale to the Clondike Group. Clondike operates a portfolio of more than 20 garden centres across Scotland, England and Wales. The sale of the Creath Food Company, which Mr Landale established in 2017 in a former Edinburgh Woolen Mill store, was brokered by Christine Co. Mr Landale said, "I am proud and pleased that we completed the sale of the Creath Food Company to the Clondike Group. I would like to thank all those past and present who have helped make the Creath Food Company the very special place it is today. I am leaving a successful business in good hands, and I wish the Clondike Group and all the fabulous TCFC staff every success in the future." Clondike Group said it intends to continue running the farm shop under its existing name. Chief Executive David Yardley said, "The Creath Food Company has been long admired by Clondike and is a great addition to the group. The nature of the business works nicely alongside our garden centres, and we look forward to working with the team in Creath to learn from their foodie expertise." Liam Bain, business agent at Christie & Co, said, "The Creath Food Company is a wonderful business, offering the best product Scotland has to offer. From the first minute the buyer showed interest, both parties worked tirelessly to ensure a deal could be completed. Christie & Co were happy to work with owner and founder, Jamie Landale, throughout the process and wish him the best in his next venture. Outstanding retail businesses like this demand strong premiums in the marketplace, with Christie & Co well placed to connect our clients with our trusted buyer network." And that article was by Deputy Business Editor Scott Wright. From the Herald Scotland, Wednesday the 6th of December, from the business section, Scotland flights, jet tours Italy, Spain, Greece, New Year deals. Article written by business correspondent Brian Donnelly. An airline and holiday company has listed last minute deals for New Year breaks from Scotland. Jet2 City Break said travellers can embrace new traditions in places like Athens in Greece, Barcelona in Spain, or Rome in Italy. Those travelling from Glasgow with Jet2 City Breaks over the festive period can book flights with airlinejet2.com, including a 22kg baggage allowance and a choice of 2 5-star hotels in central locations in one handy package. Jet2.com said, "With the countdown to the new year well underway and some fantastic last minute deals available in Jet2 City Breaks winter sale, now is the perfect time to book a magical city break escape." Now operating as a year-round destination for Jet2 City Breaks, Greece's capital city offers a unique New Year's Eve celebration by combining the culture of ancient Greece with street parties, authentic street food and vibrant music. Watch the sunset in another year by world-renowned historical sites such as the Acropolis as fireworks light up the skies. In one example, Jet2 City Breaks is also offering 4 nights room-only departing from Glasgow on December the 29th, for £719 per person, based on two sharing. Jet2.com added, walked the paths of emperors in this year's New Year's Eve in the iconic capital of Italy. Wished for an incredible year by the Trevi Fountain before heading to an outdoor concert by the ancient architecture and luscious parks. It said, enjoy the tranquility of the last day of the year before the city comes alive at night to celebrate, with lights shining from dainty restaurants, cafes and bars on every lively street. It added about the Spanish destination, whether it's seeing in the new year on the beach for the first swim of the year, or at the city's bustling street parties, Barcelona guarantees an upbeat New Year's Eve celebration. Between the quirky neighbourhoods and breathtaking sights, find yourself sampling local delicacies as traditional flamenco dancers parade in the streets. Swing by a rooftop bar to take in the breathtaking views from above as a countdown to January commences. And that article was by Brian Donnelly. From the Herald Scotland, Wednesday the 6th of December, from the business section. Scotland property. Aberdeenshire builder banking heals sales. By Brian Donnelly, business correspondent. A Scottish house builder has posted record home sales and a robust set of results. Bancon Group, the Aberdeenshire-based house building and construction group, reported a 16% increase in turnover and strong profits in its accounts for the year ended March 2023. Turnover for the year was up £80 million in the previous year to £132 million. Bancon Group delivered operating profits of £4.6 million despite cost inflation and the well-documented headwinds being experienced by the industry. Pre-tax profits of £1.8 million were slightly behind the £2.7 million reported in the previous year, as a result of writing down the value of a long-held development. The record level of activity in the year for Bancon Homes delivered a turnover of £68.4 million compared to £51.3 million in the previous financial year. The firm said this is attributed to the resilience of the markets in which Bancon Homes operates, the quality of the product, the attractiveness of the locations and a genuine focus on customer service. Bancon Homes said it successfully brought forward future phases of its developments in Aberdeen and Aberdeenshire and started on two new developments in the Central Belt during the period. Turnover at Bancon Construction was £35.5 million, 18% ahead of the previous year, and profits before tax were the highest reported since 2007. It said this has been achieved through structural changes and tight margin control. Bancon Construction has a strong order book, with turnover in excess of £40 million secured in the current financial year. Meanwhile, despite an overall slowdown in the market in the second half of the financial year, Deeside Timberframe maintained activity at a similar level to the previous year, with turnover of £28 million compared to £32.6 million. The group reports a positive outlook for 2023-24, and has renewed its banking facilities with Santander for a further 3 years. Kevin McColgan, the chief executive who joined the group in September this year, said, these robust results, with a second consecutive year of increased home sales, combined with the renewal of our banking facility, demonstrate the success of our current strategies and the confidence in our future prospects. Our strong financial position, positive sales performance in the current financial year, and strong forward orders means we are exceptionally well placed to invest in and deliver our growth ambitions even against the backdrop of the rising costs of raw materials and the wider economic uncertainties. And that article was by business correspondent Brian Donnelly. From the Herald Scotland, Wednesday the 6th of December, from the business section, UCI Cycling World Championships worth over £6 million for Scottish Borders. Article by Craig Williams. The 2023 UCI Cycling World Championships are estimated to have a direct economic impact on the Scottish Borders of over £6 million. Councillors were told of the estimated benefit at a meeting of Scottish Border Council's Executive Committee this week. Glenrothes Forest, one of Scotland's most renowned mountain bike locations, was the official venue for the mountain bike cross-country and cross-country marathon events at the championships, which took place in Glasgow and across Scotland in August. located near Peebles, the vast forest is owned and managed by Forestry and Land Scotland. Councillor Scott Hamilton, executive member for the Community and Business Development, said, "Glen Chess was an outstanding venue for the World Championships, and I'm delighted at the incredibly positive results that have been presented to us today. The boost to the local economy from competitors, support staff, spectators, event staff and volunteers is substantial and provided a huge return on our investment in the event. I'd like to thank all the partners involved with putting on the championship in the Borders. These results emphasise the very positive impact that the Council's investment into bringing national and international scale events to the area can have, and we remain committed to continuing to do this whilst also supporting existing local events to grow and new events to take place." Trudy Lindbraid, Chief Executive Officer, 2023 UCI Cycling World Championships, said, "The outcomes of the local economic and social impacts on the Scottish Borders demonstrate the benefit of the geographical spread of the 2023 UCI Cycling World Championships across Scotland. The opportunity for a renowned regional mountain biking location such as Glen Chess Forest, successfully hosting the mountain bike cross-country events that were broadcast around the world, is something the local community can be immensely proud of. It was tremendous to see so many international and local visitors descend on the region in support of the World Championships, providing a significant boost for the economy and supporting the legacy ambitions of South of Scotland Cycling Strategy, which will further embrace the power of the bike." David Hope Jones, OBE, Chief Executive of the South of Scotland Destination Alliance, said, "The UCI Cycling World Championships at Glen Chess were a tremendous success, with tens of thousands of spectators flocking to Peeblesshire from near and far to enjoy the thrilling races between the world's best cross-country mountain bikers. These economic impact statistics demonstrate the enormous value of such events to local tourism and hospitality businesses. As one of the flagship events in our real year of cycling in the south of Scotland, along with the launch of the fantastic new Kirkpatrick coast-to-coast route, the championships have introduced a whole new audience to the home of the bike. The positive experiences visitors will have taken away with them following the event are arguably even more valuable to the south of Scotland than the financial benefits, since they will now spread the word far and wide and encourage even more people to discover this exceptional part of the world for themselves." Professor Russell Griggs, Chair of South of Scotland's Enterprise, said, "What a great event it was, and the economic impact of the 2023 UCI Cycling World Championships on the Scottish Borders really does highlight the power of the bike. Cycling offers significant economic opportunities for our region, as well as the South of Scotland Cycling Partnership believes it can positively impact and many other aspects of our society. These include addressing fuel poverty, transport issues, community isolation, health and well-being, workforce and education inclusion and diversity and equality. After such a positive year for the South of Scotland, we now want to build on this success and continue to make progress with the South of Scotland Cycling Partnership strategy and our ultimate aim of making the South a world-class cycling location." And that article was written by Craig Williams and read by me, Ian.
This is from the Herald Scotland on Thursday the 7th of December 2023, from the news section. Blood Donation Scotland. Urgent call for Christmas donors. This article is written by Ginny Saunderson. A Scottish baby who was born weighing the same amount as a small Christmas pudding survived due to blood donations. Lottie Watson, who was born 3 months early, had to have 5 blood transfusions after her weight dropped to just over a pound. She is now celebrating her first Christmas thanks to a blood donation, and people are being asked to donate early to save lives like hers this festive period. Lottie's father, Chris Watson, said, "Our treasured daughter Lottie was born 3 months early. Lack of blood flow and loss of amniotic fluid resulted in an early delivery. Lottie had stopped growing and had reduced movements. She was delivered just in time. Lottie weighed just 1 pound 4 ounces when she was born, which dropped to 1 pound 1 ounce. Lottie was in Wishaw General for 13 weeks and received 5 blood transfusions. Mr. Watson said, "We knew she needed a transfusion before the numbers came back from the labs. Her colour would completely drain. She was like a whole new baby after her transfusion. I had never thought about giving blood. It simply hadn't crossed my mind. When I saw what a difference it made to Lottie, I swore I would give back as soon as she was well." Lottie now weighs 9 pounds 4 ounces and has recently started weaning onto solid foods. In September, Mr. Watson attended the Wishaw Give Blood session with his wife Louise to give his first ever donation. He said, "I wanted to give back because if it wasn't for the kindness of strangers who gave up their time and blood, I wouldn't have my little girl. I'd like to thank all the donors who have made Lottie's treatment possible, and my family wishes all of you a very Merry Christmas." The Scottish National Blood Transfusion Service, SNBTS, is asking donors to book their festive appointment early to ensure blood and platelet supplies are at safe levels throughout the festive period. Debbie McNaughton, Associate Director of Donor Services at SNBTS, said, "We work with Scottish hospitals carefully to ensure the best blood products are available for all patient groups. An important patient group is premature babies who need specialised products. Every month, over 100 donations are manufactured specially for neonates. Baby Lottie will remind people about the need for these essential blood components. They will not take a rest over the festive period. Our appointment grids are open and we need everyone to book their festive appointment now." This year, the service is particularly asking for donors with blood group O or A to come forward. Ms. McNaughton said, "Demand for these blood groups is expected to be high over the festive period. We also need O negative donors, who are the only donors whose blood group can safely be given to everyone in an emergency situation. Christmas Day is on a Monday, which means we must ask donors to come forward early to ensure supplies are at safe levels. Peak collection days are normally midweek for blood donors. Platelets have a shelf life of only 7 days, and we anticipate donors will be busy the weekend before Christmas. It's very important donors come forward throughout December and into the new year to ensure Scottish hospitals are well stocked. Between December the 7th to the 24th, the SNBTS must receive 269 platelet donors and 8,843 whole blood donors to maintain a safe supply. Donor centres are available across Scotland, with locations in Aberdeen, Dundee, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Livingston and Inverness. There are also community sessions throughout Scotland. Book an appointment to give blood by creating an online donor account at www.scotblood.co.uk or calling 0345 9090999. That's 0345 9090999, Monday to Friday, 9 till 5. That article was written by Ginny Sanderson. This is from the Herald Scotland on the 7th of December 2023, from the news section. Yousaf's family face impossible situation. This article is written by Andrew Learmonth. Humza Yousaf has spoken of the impossible situation his family in Gaza faces, following Israel's order to evacuate. The First Minister said his brother-in-law, Mohammed El Nakla, and his wife and 4 children have no way of getting out of the Palestinian enclave. Writing on X, the site formerly known as Twitter, Mr. Yousaf said, "My brother-in-law, his wife and 4 children, the youngest is 4 months old, have been told they can leave Gaza through Rafah. The problem is they have no way of getting there. And even if they did, the fighting is ongoing. an impossible situation. We need a ceasefire now. Mr. Youssef has been calling for a full ceasefire since the conflict began with Hamas's October the 7th attack on Israel. His parents-in-law, Elizabeth and Majed El-Nakla, recently returned to Dundee after becoming trapped in Gaza when the Israeli retaliation began while they were visiting relatives. They were eventually able to flee through the Rafah border crossing in the south of the Gaza Strip. In Holyrood on Tuesday, Minister for Culture, Europe and International Development, Christina McKelvey, said the Scottish Government was gravely concerned by the resumption of hostilities over the weekend. She said ministers in Edinburgh had been in continuous discussion with the UK Government on this matter. Ms. McKelvey added, "We welcome the additional £60 million committed by the UK Government for humanitarian response in Gaza, which Scottish taxpayers have, of course, contributed to." The Scottish Government committed £750,000 to the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, and on the 2nd of November, the First Minister and I met with the European Director to discuss the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza. Officials have also consulted with various UN agencies and international humanitarian organisations operating under Scotland's Humanitarian Emergency Fund, with whom I will meet in early January. Labour's Richard Leonard pushed the Minister on Scottish enterprise support for firms that export arms to Israel. He told MSPs, "We are witnessing before our eyes what experts fear to be an unfolding genocide of the Palestinian people. The death toll defies description. Thousands more are still missing under the rubble of a quarter of a million destroyed buildings. Nowhere is safe, a population forced to flee to the south of Gaza only to be bombed when they get there. It is unthinkable that we are witnessing this. It is unconscionable that we should be a participant. So we welcome the aid provided by the Scottish Government, but what good is it if we are also providing public funding to arms manufacturers supplying the Israeli government? Will the Scottish Government agree to stop this funding immediately?" The minister replied, "Any action taken by Israel must be in accordance with international law. The Geneva Convention must be upheld, including protecting citizens against the consequences of military action, the taking of hostages, indiscriminate bombing of civilian infrastructure, intentional starvation and forced displacement of a population are prohibited under the Geneva Convention. And I would urge all people to get round the table and bring a quick resolution with a ceasefire and humanitarian aid into the areas." Israeli forces have battled Hamas militants across Gaza after expanding their ground offensive to its second largest city, Khan Yunis, where Mr. Youssef's brother works. The assault on the south threatens further mass displacement within the besieged coastal enclave, where the UN says some 1.87 million people, more than 80% of the population, have already fled their homes. Much of the north, including large parts of Gaza City, has been completely destroyed, and Palestinians fear the rest of Gaza could suffer a similar fate as Israel tries to dismantle Hamas, which has deep roots in the territory it has ruled for 16 years. On Tuesday, the Israeli military said its troops were in the heart of the southern city of Khan Yunis after what it described as the most intense day of fighting since the start of the ground operation 5 weeks ago, with heavy battles continuing in the north as well. That article was written by Andrew Learmonth.
From the Herald Scotland, Wednesday the 7th of December, from the sports section, one team in Glasgow. Dyack steps up to the mark as Thistle closed gap on top spot. By Rhys Haldane, Partick Thistle writer. Heavy snowfall during the early hours of Saturday morning saw 11 fixtures across the SPFL succumb to the weather. The Firhow ground staff, however, were well prepared, with undersoil heating and tarpaulin covers being used to ensure the in-form Jags would have a game to play. Partick Thistle, off the back of winning all three of the November fixtures, welcomed the Airdrie Orions to Maryhill. Chris Doolan's side would be set for revenge against their old foe, having tasted defeat the last time the sides met back in August. The Jags would have to do so without club captain Brian Graham, as the talismanic striker served a suspension for his off-field antics against Greenock Morton. His natural replacement, Tommy Adeloye, was also absent, having rolled his ankle in training during the week. With third-choice striker Anton Dowds out on loan, Chris Dillon was left with no other option than to turn to 18-year-old Thistlewear Academy graduate Rico Diak with the task of leading the line in his first senior start. Diak, son of former lower league journeyman Ian Diak, had only amassed 18 minutes of professional football across his four cameo appearances from the bench prior to being given the nod in the absence of his more senior counterparts. Nevertheless, the 6'3" centre forward didn't let the occasion faze him. Wasting no time getting into the thick of the action, Diak used his bulky frame to his advantage, displaying impressive hold-up play as he dominated the experienced Diamonds' defence. The young striker let the Airdrie rearguard know they wouldn't be in for an easy afternoon. Thistle continued to pile on the early pressure, and the breakthrough would come after only 7 minutes. Diak demonstrated natural goal-scoring instinct to peel off his man at the back post as he made the in-swinging delivery from Aidan Fitzpatrick's corner. Delight for the deputising striker as he wheeled off towards John Lampy, stand, beating the club crest up on his chest, a moment he had no doubt dreamt of for many a year. The chances kept on flowing for the Jags, and a second goal of the afternoon would come before half-time, though this time in a slightly more fortuitous fashion. Fitzpatrick, fresh from winning the club's Player of the Month award, continued his sparkling run of form as he ran his opposite number ragged before firing across into the box in search of Diak. The cross grazed off the thigh of Airdrie centre-half Callum Fordyce before inexplicably looking over the goalkeeper and into the back of the net off the woodwork. Despite going in at the interval with a 2-goal lead, Thistle knew the game was far from over. Rhys McCabe's men had come from a goal down to win the reverse fixture in North Lanarkshire, and the Diamonds would look to produce a similar comeback in hope of leaving Snowyfir Hill with a positive result. Airdrie Orions would pull a goal back just 10 minutes after the restart. A lapse in concentration from the Thistle backline allowed Callum Gallagher in to nod down for the unmarked Craig Watson, leaving the defender with the simplest of tasks as he fired the ball past Jamie Sneddon from 5 yards. Kerr McEnroy and Harry Milne were both introduced from the bench in an attempt to shore things up for the Jags in what proved to be a stern defensive showing. The plucky Diamonds would, however, forge one last chance to snatch a point. With 94 minutes on the clock, a bobbling ball into the box was flicked into the path of Nikolai Todorov, only for the Bulgarian striker to skew his shot wide of the target. A massive weekend for Thistle as they capitalised on the many postponements around the country to create some breathing space from the clubs below them in the table. That's now 6 games unbeaten for Chris Dillon's side, who find themselves just 6 points behind league leaders Dundee United, and the Thistle gaffer will certainly be hammering home the old adage that points on the board are more valuable than games in hand. And that article was by Partick Thistle writer Rhys Haldane. From the Herald Scotland, Thursday the 7th of December, from the sports section. Ex-Rangers ace Alfredo Morelos relegated with Santos. Article by sports writer Ewan Payton. Former Rangers striker Alfredo Morelos has suffered relegation with Santos. Last night, Pele's former club were relegated from the Brazilian top flight for the first time in their history. Morelos only joined the South American Giants in September. He signed a 2-year deal around 3 months after departing Ibrox on a free transfer. However, it looks as though his short spell at the club will come to an end, as Santos ended the season in relegation. When Morelos joined, Santos were in the midst of a relegation battle. It was hoped the Colombian's eye for goal would help him climb to safety. At the time, technical director Alexandre Gallo hailed his signing. He said, We are very happy with Murray Lewis. If he performs the way he has been performing recently, it will be a very important future dividend for the club. However, after struggling with injuries, the 27-year-old was mainly an unused substitute in the majority of his games. He made just 3 appearances for Santos, with only one of those coming from the start. He failed to score. Santos' fate was last night sealed as he battled it out with Vasco da Gama and Bahia in the final day in a bid to avoid the dreaded drop. Fortaleza consigned Santos to the Brazilian Serie B next season after scoring in injury time to inflict another home defeat on the team that Neymar played for before joining Barcelona. Fans were disgusted by what unfolded in front of their eyes as the team went down for the first time in their 111-year history. They tried to invade the pitch amid other protests happening outside the stadium post-match. Morelos, who was on the bench last night, would now almost certainly need to look for another new club. It emerged weeks ago that the ex-Rangers man had a relegation release clause in his contract. And that article was by sports writer Ewan Payton. From the Herald Scotland, Thursday the 7th of December, from the sports section, Naismith confirms Clark is Hearts number 1 despite Gordon return. Article by Aidan MacDonald. Hearts boss Stephen Naismith has maintained that Xander Clark remains the number 1 goalkeeper at the club despite Craig Gordon returning to the squad. The Scotland international has been the regular player between the sticks at Tynecastle since Gordon suffered a double leg break last December. And the 40-year-old made his first appearance on the bench for over 11 months during the 1-0 defeat to Rangers. This has prompted some speculation that Gordon may become the number 1 goalkeeper once again. However, Naismith insisted it is still Clark's position to lose. He said, "It's different from the other players returning from injury because it's a goalkeeper. It's one of those where you look at the player who's been playing and has the jersey, and again last night Xander had some fantastic saves. He had some big saves for us which kept us in the game. As much as we don't go on to get anything from the game, he keeps us in it. Through this season, Xander has been really good and consistent, so at this moment in time I think he is the right guy to be playing in goals. Craig is coming back. The next stage is being involved in the matchday squads. But if there is a time, whatever that may be or when, we will see. But at the moment, Xander is the guy who's playing. I think he, Xander Clark, has been really good. I think he's consistently played and consistently performed at a good level. As with any goalkeeper, when they make a mistake it is jumped upon. I think when we have some great goalkeepers here, it gets emphasised at any point. But Xander has been a consistent performer for me in the last year. He's come here probably in strange circumstances for someone in his position." Naismith also talked up Clark's experience in the Scottish game, highlighting this as one of the important things he brings to the Hearts squad. "He has won a double with St Johnstone, then not to the club for a period before coming here as number 2 at a stage of his career when he was really experienced," he continued. "Then Craig gets injured and he has to get up to speed quickly, and then continuously perform. In that period he has made his Scotland debut, got more caps, and I think he's in a much better position now than he was a year ago. So it's been a positive year for him." And that article was by football writer Aidan MacDonald. From the Herald Scotland, Thursday the 7th of December, from the sports section, Scotland Euro 2024 opener versus Germany to be shown on STV. Article by Ewan Payton. Scotland's opening game at Euro 2024 will be broadcast live on terrestrial television. STV has announced they will showcase the opening game of the European Championships in Germany. And that of course features Steve Clark's side up against the host nation on June the 14th. STV will also show England's final group game against Slovenia and will have picks 1, 2 and 3 of the round of 16 as well as the first pick of the semi-finals. STV has secured joint rights for the final with the BBC, which has also announced plans to show Scotland's group games against Switzerland, 19th of June, and Hungary, 23rd of June, and England's first two group games against Serbia, 16th of June, and Denmark, 20th of June. Bobby Hayne, Managing Director of Broadcast at STV, said, "As if the excitement of Scotland qualifying for another European Championship isn't enough,
It's fantastic to know that Scotland fans will be able to enjoy every nail-biting minute of their opening match exclusively on STV and STV Player. Having the opportunity to show Scottish sport free-to-air on our channel is hugely important to us, and we know the country will be united in front of their TVs to watch the national team's Euro 2024 journey, as well as every other thrilling moment of the tournament next summer. And that article was by Ewan Payton.
This is from the Herald Scotland, on Friday the 8th of December 2023, from the news section. ScotRail consults passengers on ending unworkable ban on alcohol. Report by Tom Gordon, political editor. ScotRail is asking passengers if they want to end the blanket ban on drinking alcohol on their trains, which was introduced 3 years ago during the pandemic. It follows claims that the ban, which is routinely flouted, has become unworkable. ScotRail is run by a Scottish Government-owned company after being taken into public ownership in 2022, and a final decision on ending the ban would rest with ministers. BBC Scotland reported that customers logging onto ScotRail hot posts are being asked to take part in an online survey on the issue. It states, in November 2020, ScotRail introduced a 24/7 ban to help support public health measures put in place by the Scottish Government to help tackle coronavirus. This was presented and reported as a temporary measure. We are now looking to re-evaluate this prohibition, and we are seeking our passengers' views and opinions on this matter. Customers asked for a yes or no answer to the question, would you be supportive of ScotRail removing the permanent alcohol ban on trains and in stations? A second question asks, if the current total alcohol ban remained in place, would this impact on your decision to travel with ScotRail for leisure journeys in the future? Respondents are also asked if they would be less or more inclined to get on a ScotRail train in that situation, or whether it would not affect them either way. The current ban prohibits the consumption of alcohol at any Scottish station or ScotRail train at any time of the day. Passengers are also banned from carrying visible alcohol and can be stopped from getting on a train if deemed unfit. Drinking alcohol was previously banned on ScotRail services between 9 p.m. and 10 a.m. The Scottish Tories last month urged Hamza Youssef to lift the ban, claiming ScotRail and the British Transport Police both considered it unworkable. The First Minister said that ScotRail, the British Transport Police, union leaders and others had been asked for the reviews and appropriate consideration would be given to lifting the ban if the evidence supported it. But he added, we will give particular weight to the voices of women and girls, who are often those who tell us that they can feel unsafe when it comes to antisocial behaviour. Tory MSP Graeme Simpson said, this was intended to be a temporary measure during the pandemic, and both ScotRail and British Transport Police think it is unworkable as a permanent position. The ban is not helping to tackle antisocial behaviour on trains, which is a genuine concern and ought to be the real focus. The SNP government, which has the final say on this, should stop penalising ordinary travellers and concentrate on dealing properly with the minority who are disruptive. So I welcome this long overdue consultation, which looks like ScotRail's attempt to make SNP ministers finally see sense. The sale and consumption of drink on trains and at stations elsewhere in the UK is normal and mainly trouble-free. Scotland should not be imposing prohibition just to be different. That report was by Tom Gordon. This is from the Herald Scotland, on Friday the 8th of December 2023, from the news section. Sir Keir Starmer confronted by pro-Palestine activists in Glasgow. Report by Craig Williams. Two people have been arrested after Sir Keir Starmer was confronted by pro-Palestine activists in Glasgow who accused him of facilitating genocide in Gaza. Footage showed the Labour Party leader arriving at Glasgow Central Station on Thursday evening, where a group of activists were waiting with Palestinian flags. Sir Keir voted against a ceasefire in Gaza and has lost many councillors from mainly Muslim communities due to his support for Israel during a war which has killed more than 16,500 Palestinians. The backlash began during an interview with LBC, where he claimed Israel has the right to withhold power and water from Palestinian civilians. The majority of victims have been women and children, and starvation and waterborne illnesses are now becoming widespread in makeshift camps. As Sir Keir arrived, one protester shouted, "Keir Starmer, you are facilitating Israel's genocide in Gaza. Stop the massacre of over 7,000 babies. Freedom for Palestine. Stop the genocide. You're responsible for killing babies in Gaza." Another shouted, "Starmer, why did you vote for continued genocide?" Others shouted, "War criminal," and "You should be in prison." After Sir Keir got into a Range Rover, activists surrounded it shouting, "Child murderer." The protest continued outside the Crown Plaza, where Scottish Labour leader Anna Sarwar also came in for criticism from protesters for supporting genocide. Footage filmed on a train earlier showed a passenger confronting Sir Keir over the slaughter of 7,000 Palestinian children. The passenger can be seen saying, "Keir, how many more children in Palestine have to die before you call for a ceasefire? Over 7,000 children have died. Over 7,000 children have been slaughtered by Israel. This is unacceptable. What happened to human rights? What happened to democracy?" The man goes on to say, 20,000 people have died, and asks, "Where is your humanity?" A Police Scotland spokesperson said, 2 people have been arrested in connection with assaulting police officers at Congress Road, and inquiries are ongoing. There have been no reports of any injuries at either protest. That report was by Craig Williams.
The Herald, Friday the 8th of December, from the Voices section. Christmas Movies, It's a Wonderful Life versus Die Hard by Susan Swarbrick. How do you like your festive viewing? Are you all about the classics? Do you prefer a comedy or something a bit more thrill-packed and gritty? It is no secret that I'm a sucker for a rom-com, and the schmaltzier the better. The kind of saccharine sweet sentimentality that makes your teeth ache simply by watching the opening credits. We are talking Christmas tree farms, big city girls returning to sleepy hometowns, sleigh rides, quaint bakeries, and rugged outdoorsy men in quilted body warmers. Yep, there is a lot to unpick there, but enough for me. What does your best loved movie say about you? Let's jump right in. The Grinch. One of my favourite memes reads, "With every passing year, I understand more and more why the Grinch just wanted to live alone with his dog." A bit like Karate Kid, where Daniel LaRusso is the real villain of the piece and Johnny Lawrence actually the much maligned good guy. The Grinch is arguably one of the most misunderstood anti-heroes of all time. Sure, he tried to steal Christmas and wreak havoc on Whoville, but that's largely because he despised all the enforced merriment and faux niceties of the season. If you are a fan of the Grinch, then you are probably an extroverted introvert. Around the wrong people, your social battery feels constantly depleted. But spend time with the right people and your heart grows 3 sizes. Die Hard. Is Die Hard a true Christmas movie? Or is it merely Christmas adjacent? We will set aside that perennial argument for now and get down to the nitty-gritty. What does watching Die Hard every December say about you? If a shoot-em-up flick with an off-duty cop crawling through an air-conditioning duct in a grubby vest gives you the festive feels, you're probably someone who presents a tough and gruff exterior but is secretly a big softie. You crave nothing more than spending Christmas with family. And if you happen to find a 3-pack of white sports socks and a Lynx gift set wrapped up under the tree, even better. Bad Santa. If Billy Bob Thornton, as a self-loathing, Christmas-hating and all-round abhorrent department store Santa is your vibe, I would hazard that on more than one occasion you have woken up with the fear after the annual office party and are likely on first-name terms with the HR department. You tell yourself that now social media is a thing, you should really dial it back. Then again, your eye-popping dance floor antics went viral on TikTok last year, and the bragging rights lasted well into the new year, so meh. is a wonderful life. Who do we have here? Ah, yes, it's the old-fashioned traditionalist with a detailed spreadsheet and a to-the-minute timetable for all the merry fun. You want everything to be perfect. Christmas will be ruined unless you have a specific type of goose fat slathered roast potatoes, the very best chestnuts, and super fancy crackers. Your gift wrapping skills involve AI level painstaking precision. The tree looks like it was decorated by angels, and everyone watching It's a Wonderful Life together on Christmas Eve is a non-negotiable. It is all exhausting and unnecessary. Yet, that's the time-honoured magic of martyrdom. This year, cut yourself some slack. Maybe watch Bad Santa. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. You are well-intentioned and only want the best for your nearest and dearest. Even if you make a few wrong turns along the way, chances are you grew up on a diet of John Hughes films, Gen X, right? And also have Home Alone or the 1994 remake of Miracle on 34th Street topping your watch list. You are probably still mad that you never got a Mr. Frosty ice slush maker in your childhood stocking and operate under the illusion that Viennetta and Baby Sham remain the height of sophistication. That was an article called Christmas Movies is a Wonderful Life versus Die Hard by Suzanne Swarbrick.
From the Herald Scotland, Monday the 11th of December, from the news section, exclusive, City of Glasgow College, row over lecturers Nazi symbols. This exclusive is by Gabriel Mackay. Staff and students have criticised City of Glasgow College as they accused them of failing to address concerns over a lecturer who exposed classes to far-right symbols. Lecturer Russell McEwen has tattoos of both Wolf's Angel and Black Sun symbols, both of which are associated with Nazi Germany and the far-right. The former is banned in Germany and has been used by groups such as Ukraine's Azov Battalion, North American group Aryan Nations and Italy's Terza Posizione. The Black Sun originated in the Third Reich and was used by the SS and was deployed by the Christchurch shooter, Brendan Tarrant and Peyton S. Gendron, who killed 10 people in a mass shooting in Buffalo, New York. Mr. McEwen previously used the name Black Sun for his industrial metal band, though says the name was not inspired by the Nazis. In a Zoom lecture during the period of COVID lockdown, a swastika was visible in the fridge behind him. The lecturer is also said to have directed students to his social media account, which featured artwork depicting the Zyklon B poison which was used to massacre Jewish people and others during the Holocaust, pictures of Nazi soldiers and Hitler Youth, a doll wearing a swastika jumper, and a nurse wearing a flak helmet with a swastika on it. Also in Mr. McEwen's social media profiles was a painting on acrylic depicting a Valknut, which has been displayed by white supremacists. The Staff Code of Conduct for Glasgow City College states that all staff must be dressed appropriately for the work undertaken in the college and that all staff have a responsibility to positively promote diversity and equality. It further makes clear, you must not discriminate or commit an act of harassment against an employee of the college and or a student slash member of the public on grounds of age, disability, gender reassignment, including identity, marriage and civil partnership status, pregnancy and maternity, race, including colour, nationality, ethnic or national origins, religion and belief, sex, formerly gender, and sexual orientation. Staff at the college expressed concern that Mr. McEwen's actions could be in breach. A source told the Herald, college management are aware of this Zoom recording and all the students' complaints, but the college has done nothing to address and investigate this very serious breaches of the staff code of conduct. This is typical of the way the City of Glasgow College routinely fails to follow its internal policies and investigate complaints. After a complaint was raised by students, in 2021, a Zoom meeting was held between Mr. McEwen and the head of the college's art course, Tom Elliott. Mr. Elliott has since left his role, which was not related to the incident in question. In it, the lecturer made clear he had no far-right sympathies but was interested in symbolism and brought up his use of the symbols in his musical projects. In response, students sent a letter clarifying that they were not accusing Mr. McEwing of being an extremist or a member of the far-right, but said that the display of the images made them extremely uncomfortable and that it had made members of the class feel unsafe. City of Glasgow College's complaints procedure outlines that students can lodge a complaint about conduct, treatment or by attitude by a member of staff or contractor. It also outlines that a formal investigation should take place with all evidence to be recorded in a corrective and preventative action CAPA form. A formal written response must also be offered. When responding to a complainant, the college is obligated to provide an upheld / not upheld conclusion to each element of the complaint. Additionally, the response must also address the complaint's desired outcome. It's understood no formal investigation took place, despite students being unhappy with the conduct of both the lecturer and the response of the college. It's understood staff have also raised concerns about the incident with college management in recent days. Russell McEwen said, "This matter was fully examined and dealt with internally by the college 3 years ago and, as I categorically said at the time, I have no sympathies or affiliation to any far-right political ideology and never have. I have never been a member of a political party and do not engage with students politically. It is all about the critique of art for me and I do have an interest in the power of symbolism, including the shock value of certain images. I recognised 3 years ago that it was naive of me to post some symbols on my private, pseudonym social media account which are associated with extremism, so I removed them and voluntarily agreed not to post any such images or symbols in the future." A City of Glasgow College spokesperson said, "We take great pride in the diversity of our students and staff and have some 150 nationalities on our twin site campus, and we utterly condemn the divisive and offensive views of far-right politics. Equality, diversity and inclusiveness, EDI, is integral to everything we do and is fully embedded into our strategic and operational plans. EDI values are also imbued through our curriculum and our principal was the first in the college sector to sign the Declaration of Anti-Racism. 3 years ago, some students in one of Russell's classes raised concerns about him allegedly posting offensive and shocking images on a private social media account under an alias which was entirely unconnected to the college and to his work as a part-time visual communications lecturer. Although the students never formally raised a complaint against that lecturer, their concerns were taken very seriously and the issue was properly reviewed and scrutinised back in early 2021. Senior management, in the form of the former Dean of Creative Industries faculty, explored the issue and held discussions with those students and then with Russell and faculty managers. There was never any question of illegality in this issue and Russell has always made it clear that he has never had any sympathy towards far-right or any other political ideology and nor has he ever pushed any political ideology onto his students. No prior or subsequent concerns have ever been raised by any of his students. The college has a strict social media policy for all college accounts and any link to the college, but this was out of scope because it was a personal account with no connection to the college. Russell closed that private social media account, agreed to desist from posting any similar offensive images on any other accounts, and completed EDI learning modules. And that article was an exclusive by Gabriel Mackay. From the Herald Scotland, Monday the 11th of December, from the news section, "Diplomatic Spat. Yousaf slams petty and misguided Cameron." Article by Andrew Learmonth. Hamza Yousaf has hit back at David Cameron after the Foreign Secretary threatened to close down Scotland's overseas offices following a meeting between the First Minister and the President of Turkey. The SNP leader said the Tory peer was being really petty and frankly misguided. He added that nothing had been discussed at the meeting with Recep Tayyip Erdogan at COP28 that hadn't been discussed at other meetings. Mr. Yousaf met the Turkish leader at the climate summit in Dubai earlier this month, saying the pair had discussed the climate crisis and the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. However, the First Minister did so without an official from the Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office's FCDO being present. Details of the diplomatic spat were revealed by the BBC on Sunday. They obtained a letter from Lord Cameron to the Scottish Constitution Secretary, Angus Robertson, complaining about the matter. He said the Scottish Government had assured the FCDO that it would give sufficient advance notice of the meeting to allow one of his officials to attend. The Foreign Secretary said this was not done. He went on, "The absence of an FCDO official at this meeting contravenes the protocols and our guidance on FCDO support to devolve government ministers' overseas visits. Any further breaches of the protocol that ministerial meetings have an FCDO official present will result in no further FCDO facilitation of meetings or logistical support. We will also need to consider the presence of Scottish government offices in UK government posts." Speaking to the PA on Monday morning, Mr. Youssef said, "First of all, let's be clear, the approach from Lord Cameron is really petty and frankly misguided. Scotland is a part of the UK, outside of London, that has attracted the most foreign direct investment for 8 years in a row. That happens because the Scottish Government's international engagement is valued and has impact. To threaten to curtail that, to stop that international engagement, the international engagement from the elected Scottish Government from an unelected Lord, I think is misguided and petty." The First Minister said the meeting in question had been rearranged at short notice by the Turkish President's team, but that he would have had no problem with a UK government official, or even Lord Cameron himself, attending. "It was rearranged at short notice by the President of Turkey's team. The FCDO official chose not to stay with the Scottish delegation the whole day, and because of that, they ended up missing the meeting. Nothing was discussed that hadn't been discussed in other meetings, such as the climate crisis, and in this particular meeting, the issue of the Israel-Gaza conflict." The First Minister added that an FCDO official was at the vast majority of meetings he had at during the climate summit. Mr. Youssef said revoking support from the Scottish Government abroad would affect Scottish business, affect the Scottish economy. He added, "Our exports are worth over £6 billion in whisky alone over the last year, showing how important exports, how important international engagement is to Scotland's economy." For Lord Cameron to say he's basically going to stop Scotland's international engagement because of one meeting where one FCDO official wasn't able to attend, because, of course, at events like COP, diaries can change quite last minute, it's really petty, really misguided. I suggest to Lord Cameron that next time, if he has an issue like that, he should just pick up the phone. I'm sure it can be resolved. On Sunday, the BBC quoted a UK government source who said Lord Cameron wanted to take a harder line approach than his predecessor, James Cleverly. The former Foreign Secretary made a similar threat after Mr. Youssef met the Icelandic PM in August, again without UK diplomats present. A UK government source said Lord Cameron's letter was an escalation. Mr. Youssef has already been criticised from within his own party over the meeting. The Kurdish-born Glasgow SNP councillor Rosa Sally said she was disgusted as Turkey has stepped up attacks on Kurdish groups in Syria. Addressing Mr. Youssef on Twitter /X, she wrote, "Our politicians and half of the population are imprisoned by him and you shake his hand. I did not expect this from an FM that says he respects human rights." In response to Councillor Sally's criticism, Mr. Youssef said he would not stop meeting world leaders. And that article was by Andrew Learmonth.
From the Herald, Monday, 11th of December, 2023. Sports section. Scotland announced friendlies against Netherlands and Northern Ireland. By Aidan MacDonald, football writer. Scotland have announced they will face the Netherlands and Northern Ireland in friendly matches in March of next year. The fixtures will make up part of Steve Clarke's side's preparations for Euro 2024. Scotland will first travel to the Netherlands to take on the 1988 European champions in a 7:45 PM kickoff on Friday, March the 22nd, with the venue to be confirmed by the hosts in the near future. Then Hampden will host the game against Michael O'Neill's side on Tuesday, March the 26th at 7:45. Ticket information for both games will be confirmed in the near future. Clark previously insisted Scotland will not be overawed by the occasion when they open Euro 2024 against Germany. They will also play Switzerland and Hungary as they contest Group A at the tournament. And while Clark is looking forward to the occasion, he maintains that his team are not there to simply make up the numbers. Speaking to BBC Sport, he said, "You know what you're up against, and it is good to be in that in the first game. For us, we need to make sure it's not about the occasion and about the match, and we look forward to it. It did not matter who we got, as it was always going to be exciting for us. The aim is to be competitive in every match and respect every opponent. I was actually thinking I was quite hungry as the draw happened." That article was by Aidan McDonald.
This is from the Herald Scotland on Monday, the 11th of December, 2023, from Voices section. The Herald Diary, Going Underground. Article compiled by Lauren Jackson. The article begins with a photograph of a blue car with the number plate W33GEE. David Donaldson says, "I think we can safely conclude that the owner of this car does not come from Edinburgh." Going underground. Retired Central Ayrshire Labour MP Sir Brian Donoghue was on the tube in London when he heard an interesting announcement over the tannoy. "We were advised," says Sir Brian, "to be careful and to ensure we did not fall, as we would be unsteady after drinking alcohol." Adds Sir Brian, "Good advice perhaps, but necessary at 11 in the morning." The former political concedes that such early morning advice might be necessary in Glasgow. Slip sliding away. The recent snowfall reminds Ian Noble from Carstairs Village of the day, a few years ago, when he was encouraged by the grandchildren to have a wee shotty at that sledging malarkey. "I don't want to say too much about the experience," says Ian, "except to recall that the man was very understanding about his dog, and I would have liked the woman at the bottom of the street to have left her garage door open." Any old iron. Glaswegians are a nostalgic tribe who enjoy nothing better than to muse on the sepia-tinted days of yore. Facebook includes many groups that are happy to indulge this habit, including the Blasts from Glasgow Past page. An old photo of Crockett the Ironmonger on West Nile Street was recently posted there, which inspired one misty-eyed member of the group to wistfully sigh, "Used to get my paraffin in there back in the 70s. Paraffin shopping on the Glasgow High Street. Now those truly were halcyon days. Hot gossip. Two tipsy colleagues were on a Glasgow train last Friday evening, reports reader Ken Gregg. From their conversation, it was clear that they were merrily returning from the office Christmas party and discreetly dishing the dirt on their workmates. "I dinna know why the boss was fizzing wi' me," said one of them. "Just cos he telt me to do something. And I pure laughed in his face." Audience blowback. Relentless drizzle was turning Sucky Hall Street soggy the other day, says reader Barbara Conroy. This dreich state of affairs did not dissuade the local musicians from inflicting their talents on pedestrians. And there was one trumpet-playing busker ambitiously parping on his brass instrument. A small audience was huddled round him, with one less than impressed listener heard to mutter, "There's nothing sadder than a trumpet player in the rain." Semi-sitcom. TV viewing diary correspondent Julie Oliver wants to know, "Do the only fools and horses repeats they always show at this time of year now come with a trigger warning?" That article was compiled by Lauren Jackson.
From the Herald Scotland, Monday the 11th of December, from the arts section, Harry Potter first edition found in bargain bucket sells for £55,000. By Craig Williams. A Harry Potter first edition bought for £10 in 1997 in Scotland has achieved a five-figure sum at auction. The hardback copy of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone from the first Potter book print run in 1997 was spotted in a bargain bucket in a bookshop in the Highlands. The forgotten treasure went onto the hammer at Hanson's Auctioneers in Staffordshire on Monday, and sold for £55,104 to a private UK online buyer. Hanson's Books expert Jim Spencer said, "It's a great result for a great find. This was a genuine, honest first issue and a fantastically well-preserved example. It was fresh to market and deserved to go full steam like the Hogwarts Express. Of the 500 first issue hardbacks printed, 300 went to schools and libraries in order to reach a bigger audience. This is one of the even scarcer 200 that went to bookshops." The seller, a 58-year-old Scottish woman, learned about Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone after reading one of the first ever interviews with its author, J.K. Rowling, in a newspaper in the late 1990s. The seller said, "I bought the Harry Potter book before anyone really knew much about it, or the author. I found it during a family caravan trip touring round the Highlands. I discovered a bookshop cafe on an isolated peninsula after driving miles on a single-track road in the northwest of Scotland. I recognised the distinctive book cover straight away. The bookseller had placed it in a wicker bargain bucket basket on the floor. Because it had no dust jacket, I got a couple of pounds knocked off the price. Our two children enjoyed The Wizard, a tale as a bedtime story, all through that holiday in 1997. The first print run of the famous book featured only 500 hardback copies. According to Hanson's, they are the rarest and most prized Potter books, the holy grail for collectors. The vendor, who lives just north of Edinburgh, said, "My children read something online years back about how to identify first editions and told me they thought we had one of them. But I said the edition was worthless due to having no dust jacket. Sometime later I learned the book was never released with a dust jacket. At that point, we stored the book away. It left like the young Harry Potter did, in the cupboard under the stairs. I forgot about it for a long time, but then read about the rarity of first editions. I decided to contact Jim Spencer, the Harry Potter books expert at Hanson's. I wanted to authenticate my copy and find out what it might be worth. My children are grown up now and it's time for someone else to have the pleasure of owning a rare piece of literary history." Jim Spencer, Harry Potter books expert at Hanson's, said, "These first issues are getting harder and harder to find. This must be one of the few remaining copies that has been in private hands since it was purchased in 1997. It's astonishing that it ended up in a remote Scottish peninsula, and it was all down to an article in a newspaper, and perhaps a dusting of magic, that encouraged the inquisitive and very lucky buyer to pluck it from the bargain bin. Most examples are quite badly worn, especially ex-library copies. They've often been shared among friends and carried around in school rucksacks, which in some ways is lovely, capturing the buzz of Harry Potter when it first gained popularity. However, more traditional collectors are incredibly fussy about condition, which helped this book fulfil its potential. The book is the 19th hardback Philosopher's Stone first edition out of 500 discovered by Jim Spencer. They have sold at auction for between £17,500 and £69,000, plus buyer's premium, dependent on condition." And that article was by Craig Williams. From the Herald Scotland, Monday the 11th of December, from the business section, business briefing. Hearts Tynecastle Park Hotel, Edinburgh, to be launched by business correspondent Brian Donnelly. The new chief executive of a Scottish Premiership football club has hailed plans for a new stadium hotel as the club's newest and boldest venture. The Heart of Midlothian chief said the 25-bedroom hotel and event space are part of its ambitious growth plans and it is hoped the facilities will attract international interest. "It's not just a hotel for football fans," Heart's chief executive Anne Budge said. "Tynecastle Park is set to offer a truly unique hotel experience in our iconic Tynecastle Park Stadium, the home of Heart of Midlothian Football Club. Owned and operated entirely by the club, the hotel is Hearts' newest and boldest venture. It's also the only hotel of its kind found anywhere in the UK. As part of our ambitious growth plans, both on and off the pitch, our in-house hospitality team will take full responsibility for running the hotel and providing one-of-a-kind matchday experience and guest stays. The hotel rooms and additional conference and event space will offer the club an ideal opportunity to host even more events at Tynecastle, while appealing to millions of visitors that Edinburgh attracts each year as the UK's second most visited city. Integrated within the main stand at Tynecastle Park in the west of the city, it is claimed it will be the UK's first club-owned and operated hotel inside a football stadium. The Tynecastle Park Hotel will offer a choice of individually styled guest rooms, including family, executive and accessible rooms. There will also be a club lounge and a choice of six new dedicated meeting, conference and event spaces. The 25 guest rooms are being designed to a high specification, offering comfort and quality throughout, including ensuite shower rooms with marble finish, monsoon showers and emperor-sized beds. Selected guest rooms will use the latest technology to provide guests with the option of a live view of the pitch or city skyline on HD plasma screens. The Skyline restaurant, which sits on the top floor of the main stand, will be open 7 days a week, offering overnight guests and non-residents Scottish seasonal menus. The new Tynecastle Park Hotel, which launches early next year, provides easy access to the city centre for people looking for a high-quality, contemporary accommodation as part of an Edinburgh City break. Ms Budge added, "As well as our vast supporter base both in the local area and from further afield, we hope to attract international visitors and guests from around the UK looking for high-quality, contemporary accommodation as part of an Edinburgh City break. It's not just a hotel for football fans. Tynecastle Park Hotel is ideally positioned within a few minutes of the city centre, Murrayfield Stadium and the Edinburgh tramline. Also located on the right side of the city for Edinburgh Airport, this will be a perfect location for all types of visitors, including business travellers. Driven by a vision of self-sustainability, community and growth, the Tynecastle Park Hotel is owned and managed completely by the football club. The success of the hotel directly supports the ambitions of the fan-owned club. The opening offer for dinner, bed and breakfast will be available from £150 per room per night, based on two people sharing. Limited guest parking will also be available. Firms keep hiring despite downturn in business activity. Businesses in Scotland are continuing to hire despite an ongoing decline in new business and fresh orders across the manufacturing and service sectors. The latest Royal Bank Scotland PMI published this morning has pegged the level of private sector business activity at 47.1 for November. Whilst this was an improvement from the previous month's reading of 46.5, it remains firmly in negative territory below the neutral mark of 50.0 for the third month in a row. Whisky giant Diageo warned on Scotland net zero threat. A global distilling giant has warned over a threat to net zero capabilities in Scotland. The country's largest distiller said current energy provision structures are hampering progress on reaching net zero targets. In the exclusive lead in the new edition of our Business HQ monthly supplement, Deputy Business Editor Scott Wright reveals Diageo's concerns as it bids to build a green future in the industry. And that was the Business Briefing by Brian Donnelly.
This is from the Herald, Scotland, of Tuesday, the 12th of December, 2023, from the Voices section. Devolution. Put everything up for debate. This article is by Neil Mackay. Disagreement seems generally frowned upon today, which is a shame. Without disagreement, humanity would, one imagines, still be stuck in the Stone Age, contemplating the miracle of fire. Disagreement is the path to progress. Disagreement doesn't have to mean conflict, though in truth, as long as conflict is verbal and in the realm of the intellect, far removed from fists and weapons, then that's no bad thing either. You suggest a position, I suggest an alternative, eventually we compromise. Both of us get some of what we want, neither dominates the other. That's the best map to follow along the sometimes discomforting path of democracy.
Yet it's the only path, unless you veer off into the dark, frightening woods. However, since social media sunk its venomous fangs into us, disagreement has been subject to genetic mutation. It's either a blood sport of threats, abuse, and silencing, or it's feared and rejected, with some, understandably, refusing to engage in such brutal showdowns and instead favouring the safety of groupthink. If you're searching for primary evidence attesting to the debasement of society in the 21st century, then the collapse of the notion of disagreement as a force for good stares you in the face. Let's focus on the evidence in our own backyard. There should be a healthy, robust debate in Scotland right now, hammering out exactly what devolution means. Independence is a distant dream at best. So let's park that position temporarily and explore what we have constitutionally and whether that's fit for purpose. Devolution is now well into adulthood. The Scottish Parliament will be 25 years old next year. It unquestionably requires a 21st century upgrade. Some will prefer the status quo, some will want fewer powers, and some more powers. The debate should have taken the shape of an ongoing national conversation, with disagreement reasoned and fact-based. Passions could run high, tempers fray, and that would be fine. That's messy old democracy. But debate hasn't taken place. Instead, devolution has stagnated. We are locked in a trench warfare slog between the fundamentalisms of independence and muscular unionism, personified by the Scottish and UK governments. That's a zero-sum game. In other words, disagreement becomes pointless, as there's no real debate and nobody will give ground. Thus, we come to our current destination, a legal and administrative Cold War between Edinburgh and London. We've had legislative battles over trans rights land in court, along with the issue of whether the Scottish Parliament has the power to hold a referendum. We've also had the deposit return scheme end in the ditch due to standoffs between London and Edinburgh. All three cases centred on the limits of devolution. An ongoing rolling discussion about what devolution means, where the parameters of devolution stand, might have prevented these issues, particularly around trans rights and environmentalism, descending into ugly, unnecessary culture wars. If both governments took seriously their obligations to hone and perfect the imperfect creation that's devolution, we wouldn't have ended with needless litigation. Then we've the latest evidence of failed debate on both sides, the row over First Minister Humza Yousaf meeting Turkey's authoritarian strongman Recep Erdogan at COP28. UK Foreign Secretary David Cameron sees this as a step too far by a devolved administration and is threatening to withdraw cooperation for Scottish ministers regarding meetings with overseas governments. Now, there's plenty to argue about here. Whether Mr. Yousaf acted contrary to British interests, the irony of an unelected lord giving lectures about democracy, how much latitude Scotland should have when it comes to foreign relations. But the substantive issue is this. Mr. Yousaf's Erdogan meeting is a perfect example of the untested limits of devolution, and so it should be a matter for reasoned discussion, not another opportunity for politicians to score populist points by painting opponents as villains. The reverse is also true. There's every possibility Scottish courts could be used as a vehicle to halt the Conservative government's Rwanda bill. Again, pick whichever side you wish. But once more, it proves the fluid borders of devolution need explored. Where does the power of one end and the other begin? a healthy debate on devolution can only enhance our politics. Rather than warring, Edinburgh and London could act as checks and balances on each other, the inner and outer wheels of democracy constraining and steadying one another. This isn't a reason for yes voters to stop supporting independence. It's simply a means to improve politics, while yes voters simultaneously continue campaigning for Scottish independence. It's not hard to hold two competing thoughts simultaneously. Now, the prospect of a Labour government offers a chance to reset devolution. Labour proposes effectively renewing the UK's social contract, English devolution, replacing the House of Lords with an assembly of the nations and regions, which would give Scotland a greater voice and greater cooperation between the four UK governments. Labour's proposals don't go far enough, in my view. There should be an intelligent discussion about more powers for Scotland. The first step Keir Starmer should take on, assuming office, is establishing a constitutional commission in which Holyrood's powers are debated. Those who wish to limit Scotland's powers should have as much right to speak as those like me who believe Scotland needs more powers, including full fiscal autonomy. Every political party should engage honestly, not as a spoiler for either hardline nationalism or unionism. Nobody will get everything they want from this, and that's good. Such a debate wouldn't lead to independence, so folk like me will be disappointed. Fine. It won't lead to the defeat of the Yes movement, so truculent unionism will be disappointed too. Fine. What it should lead to is a better settlement when it comes to how this nation operates. We could define the contours of devolution and work within them to keep all governments on track so that they serve the people, not their own petty obsessions. At best, it would allow passions to cool and bring an end to governments fighting each other in court like some bitter divorcing couple. Alternatively, we could just keep on the path we're on. But such a step would be to devolve our collective common sense. On that, I don't think anyone could disagree. That article was by Neil Mackay. This is from the Herald Scotland of Tuesday, the 12th of December, 2023, from the business section. Glasgow. Property firm reveals two acquisitions on the same day. This article is by Scott Wright. Cairn Group has returned to the acquisition trail with a brace of deals, including the purchase of Clyde Properties' factoring arm. Glasgow-based Cairn has made the purchase of Clyde PM and the Scottish arm of Glasgow-based Nation Spaces Developments through Factors Direct, the property factoring company it launched earlier this year. Nation Spaces operates across all aspects of property management. The deals come hard on the heels of Cairn's acquisition of Rannoch Property, the Glasgow-based estate agency, and as the company targets doubling its turnover to £3 million and property portfolio to 2,500 units under management within 5 years. The latest acquisitions mean Cairn now manages a portfolio of 1,400 units across Glasgow and Edinburgh. 220 units are now under the management of Factors Direct. David Rowand, Managing Director of Cairn Group, said, "We're delighted to secure these two acquisitions, which, from a standing start earlier this year, put Factors Direct firmly on the map for dedicated residential property management services throughout Scotland's central belt. Homeowners in the west of Scotland will be very familiar with Clyde Property, so it is something of a coup to secure its property management division. while Nation Spaces Developments is a long-established firm which is seeking to refocus its operations south of the border, presenting us with the opportunity to snap up its Scottish arm. Gemma Waters, Managing Director of Factors Direct, added, "Our goal is to have a positive impact on the Central Scotland property factoring market and give owners direct input into the management of their building. These deals will enable us to do just that." Although Factors Direct was only established this year, our management team has over two decades of experience in owning, operating, and managing residential properties across the Central Belt, and is well versed in the challenges and opportunities unique to Scotland's real estate sector. It is our extensive experience in property renting and selling that unveiled an urgent need for an enhanced factoring experience for our clients, leading to the inception of Factors Direct. In recent years, Cairn has acquired JJM Properties in Glasgow, Grange Letting in Edinburgh, and Stephen McIntyre Letting in Portobello, all of which have since been rebranded to Cairn. It now employs a staff of 25. That article was by Scott Wright. This is from the Herald Scotland of Tuesday, the 12th of December, 2023, from the business section. Scotland Travel. Edinburgh opening planned for hotel chain. This article is by Craig Williams. A European hotel operator has revealed plans to expand into Scotland for the first time. The plans will see Meininga Hotels bring its hybrid hotel concept to Edinburgh. The project will transform a former office building near Haymarket into the new hotel, which will feature 157 rooms with a total of 549 beds, including double rooms, triple rooms, four bedrooms, and even six bedrooms. Explaining the choice of location, Ajit Menon, CEO of Meininga Hotels, said, "The location of our planned property in Edinburgh aligns perfectly with our slogan, Step Out and Explore. We want to encourage our guests to get to know and appreciate the city. The Haymarket area is ideal for this purpose, centrally located and with perfect access to all major attractions." He added, "We are excited to bring the proven and successful Meininga hybrid hotel concept to Edinburgh, re-entering the United Kingdom and further expanding our presence in Europe. We believe that Edinburgh, with its lively, diverse and unique nature, resonates with the Meininga culture. Edinburgh attracts families, couples, backpackers, school groups, friends and business travellers alike, making the city a perfect fit for our brand. Founded in 1999 in Berlin, today, Meininga Hotels has 35 operating leasehold and management sites and over 19,500 beds across 25 European cities. This year saw Meininga open hotels in Venice, Cologne, Krakow this year, with further planned openings in Barcelona." That article was by Craig Williams.
That concludes this week's edition of the Herald Scotland podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at Cairn Review and tell your friends about our service.